More earnings reports showing a brighter economy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're just a few minutes into the trading for the day, and we ask that question, where's Wall Street? Right now, markets are down across the board. The S&P off about 0.5%, the NASDAQ down about 0.4%. And the Dow is shedding 38 points at 10,351. European shares are off as well this morning, anywhere from 0.5% to 1%. And Asian shares closed mixed today, although the Nikkei lost about 2.5% today in trading. A lot of bank stocks down today. We got some numbers this morning. McDonald's earnings, profits up, better than expected from analysts. Kimberly-Clark profits up in its fourth quarter. Earnings at General Electric down 19%, but better than analysts had expected. And the company says it saw some improvements at the end of the year. So let's get some analysis from Chris Lowe. He's a chief economist at FTN Financial, and he's with us live from New York this morning. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
A lot of these reports are beating analysts' expectations. I mean, what does that say about the overall view of the economy?
Well, look, two important takeaways, I think. One, this is not the first quarter we've had better than expected earnings. It's the third or fourth. It's a precursor to even better things to come. And two, next Friday, we are going to get fourth quarter GDP. Analysts right now are rushing to revise their estimates upward to 5.5 to 6%, it looks like.
5.5 to 6%. Where is that coming from? I mean, is this government stimulus? I mean, or is the economy found its own footing?
Even less stimulus than in the third quarter, the biggest contribution, probably about 3.5 percentage points, is coming from inventories. We tend to dismiss that as probably a one-off. But here's the thing. At economic turning points, inventories are the engine that takes GDP to hopefully a sustainable level of growth. I think they will contribute probably for four quarters and in the process create real jobs, real income, and hopefully sustainable expansion.
And you say inventory. That sounds sort of like an economic sort of jargony term. What is inventory?
What we're looking at here is a situation where, you know, last year stores had way too much stuff and not enough people buying them. We've come full circle, and this Christmas one of the big themes was whether you went into Walmart or Saks, the shelves were half empty, and they're just now beginning to restock. So these are real goods being produced in real factories and being shipped into real stores to sell. The inventory cycle is one of those economic, you know, sort of truisms that we look at in business cycles. But the key is they tend to be the springboard to sustained economic growth. And that's the important thing. This is the beginning of that part of the cycle where I think we're going to see some real job creation.
All right. Chris Lowe joining us this morning. Chris, thanks.
You're welcome.
In just a few minutes, the House Financial Services Committee will gavel to order a hearing on bankers' pay. The committee's likely to hear some public outrage over huge bonuses paid to top executives at some of the big banks that were bailed out by taxpayers. Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us live from our Washington Bureau. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So on the committee agenda?
Well, they're looking at several ideas to discourage those multi-million dollar salaries for bankers. One proposal would impose a surtax on bonuses. Another requires a link between bonuses and the company's performance, like paying the bonuses in the form of long-term stock options, for example. Another idea comes from Nell Minow of the Corporate Library, who's testifying today. She'll tell the committee they should give shareholders more power to get rid of board members who pay executives too much.
After all, at the end of the day, it's the boards of directors who design and approve these pay plans. And if we can't throw those guys out of office, then we're just going to keep repeating the same problems.
What do banks, John, think about these proposals to limit their pay?
Well, they say that they're getting their own act together, including requiring some clawback provisions. And that's where an executive would have to give back salary if the company's investments go sour. And banks also warn that a government-imposed salary limit would chase away talented employees, put U.S. banks at a competitive disadvantage. But Chairman Barney Frank wants to add some salary limits to financial regulatory reform, which has already passed the House but could be amended when the bill is reconciled with the Senate version.
And again, that's coming up in just a few minutes. On the Hill.
That's right.
All right. Marketplace's John Dimsdale joining us from Washington. John, thanks.
You're welcome.
listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, January 22nd, 2010, at marketplace.org. The Obama administration's newfound emphasis on bank reform has gone global. Next week, U.S. officials head to London to discuss how the proposed American bank tax and regulations could affect the rest of the world. From London, here's Christopher Wirth.
The risk is that tougher restrictions on Wall Street could simply send bankers packing. They could head for more friendly locales like London if measures like these aren't coordinated. Justin Urquhart Stewart is with Seven Investment Management. He says there's a possibility that Obama's proposals could give London an advantage when it comes to where banks decide to set up shop, but
much more likely is that London would follow very similar actions. And although we don't know in detail what they are, the thrust of being able to separate out the investment banking from the commercial banking in terms of risk would very likely follow in London too.
Other leaders from Europe, Japan, and Canada will also be in attendance next week when the G7 group of industrialized nations meets. Obama's proposals may be less relevant for many continental European banks, which see themselves as worlds apart from the American and British models they blame for destabilizing the global economy. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
President Obama is talking jobs today in Ohio. He's touring a wind turbine manufacturing facility, and he's holding a town hall meeting just outside of Cleveland in Lorain County, Ohio. From station WCPN, Dan Bobkoff has a preview.
The trip is part of the president's so-called White House to Main Street tour, and he picked a good backdrop. Lorain's industrial glory days, building ships and making steel, ended decades ago. Now its main streets are quiet, and the unemployment rate looks like the rest of the country, at about 10%. Just last week, Lorain County leaders eliminated nearly all public bus routes. But with the Republican upset in the Massachusetts Senate race casting doubt on some of Mr. Obama's major policy plans, Michael Parkin of Oberlin College says this trip might be coming at an opportune time for the president.
The victory in Massachusetts by the Republican candidate should really remind Obama to go back to his campaign message, to not lose sight of what made him so popular during the campaign, which is this idea that he has of wanting to connect with people, of listening to people. And I think this tour is a good representation of that.
Parkin says Lorain residents want more than an uplifting speech. They'll be listening for specifics on training and job creation. In Cleveland, I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
The Sundance Film Festival just kicked off in Park City, Utah. If you don't have an invitation, you can get a sampling of what's on screen by logging on instead. YouTube, which is owned by Google, has announced it'll offer full-length feature films from Sundance for rent. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that.
She's not gone. Stop saying that.
She is gone.
I don't believe it, Anderson.
Mom is gone. She got abducted by these thuggy Wall Street types. But you can find her on YouTube in the film Children of Invention. It's one of five films available for rent on the site beginning today. The fee is $4.
It's absolutely no different whatsoever than renting a movie from iTunes or from Amazon Unbox or Netflix.
And that's part of the point for YouTube, says Jonathan Taplin of the USC Annenberg School. The site needs more polished content to attract advertisers.
Advertisers are more comfortable where they know exactly what the content is, whereas potentially putting your ad next to a cat video or, you know, something like that is maybe not as interesting.
What's likely to be more interesting is high-profile films from Sundance, says Carolyn McCarthy of CNET.
They have the opportunity to look like they have indie cred, but then also to make these inroads with the big film industry.
McCarthy says YouTube eventually wants to offer mainstream Hollywood films as well. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Well, yesterday we told you about a study that challenged stereotypes about Hispanic immigration. It looked at small rural towns that saw an influx of undocumented Latino laborers between 1990 and the year 2000. Many common stereotypes about Hispanics turned out to be false. But there were some exceptions. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler takes us to the small town of Warsaw, North Carolina.
You can see the changing demographics in the faces of school children. Traditionally, most of the students at Warsaw Elementary School have been black or white. These days, there are more kids from Mexico and other Latin American countries. Most are presumed to be in the country illegally. In fact, Hispanics make up about 20% of the population in Duplin County. That's almost three times the average in other parts of North Carolina. And the flood of new folks has put a strain on some local services. Wynn Batten is mayor of Warsaw.
We have had some overcrowding in some of our schools because of the influx of Hispanic and Latino workers.
A recent study looked at the economic impact of Hispanic immigrants moving into small rural communities. The study found that poverty and unemployment rates actually fell when Hispanics came to town. But the new immigrants did create new expenses for rural schools. Study co-author Martha Crowley with North Carolina State University says schools face a challenge with kids who can't speak English.
The schools are required to provide bilingual materials, bilingual information to go out to parents, English as a second language programs that they, in other circumstances, would not need to provide or pay for.
A similar kind of financial pressure has been placed on rural hospitals. Duplin General Hospital doesn't track the legal status of its patients, but it has seen an increase in Hispanics without insurance, and they constitute a majority of patients receiving some hospital services, like delivering babies.
We had 532 deliveries. 56% of those deliveries were Latino.
That's Harvey Case, the president of Duplin General Hospital. He says translators had to be hired to help those who speak only Spanish.
Just like a lot of rural hospitals, our hospital is losing money, and anytime you get a population that has a negative impact on the operating margin, it just creates a real challenge for us.
It's a challenge shared by rural schools and hospitals around the country. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Well, China has struck back against the U.S. State Department over internet freedom. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton yesterday called on the Chinese to lift restrictions on censorship. China today reacted to what it called information imperialism. For more, let's bring in Marketplace Asia correspondent Scott Tong. He's in Shanghai. Hi, Scott.
Steve, good morning.
Remind us what Secretary Clinton said yesterday.
She adopted a pretty strong tone, invoking Cold War rhetoric of us versus them on the issue of information freedom. She said free information helped those who fought against the Iron Curtain, and said pretty directly that the United States stood on the side of information freedom, but she also said U.S. companies should be on the same side, that they need to make a principled stand. And that was a reference to Google, which, as you know, last week threatened to pull out of China because of the internet censorship here and after being hacked from forces that say were inside China.
So, Scott, what has been the Chinese reaction then?
Well, in the last few hours, the foreign ministry has come out with a statement that says this all could harm relations between the two countries. A Chinese state-run newspaper went a step further, and they threw the Cold War language right back at the U.S. and likened this to information imperialism, so stay out of our business. No one we talked to thinks that Beijing is irate about this, but they have a couple things that they're unhappy about, not just the speech, but also that the U.S. embassy and consulates hosted some Chinese bloggers today in China, and they tend to feel very strongly about internet freedom. Steve?
So is there any sign, Scott, China will back down and say get rid of censorship?
We don't see any here. In fact, it's getting worse, if anything. But they also know that most companies still want to come to China and play. It's still worth it despite the environment.
All right. Marketplace's Asian correspondent, Scott Tong. Scott, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Environmental groups haven't stopped hoping to get a climate change bill through Congress. One group is even collaborating with a guy who used to be a political foe. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sarah Gardner.
Environmental Defense Fund President Fred Krupp still believes Congress will pass a bill to curb greenhouse gas emissions. He says Americans support it, and he points to several new polls as evidence. One, by the Benenson Strategy Group, shows 58% of Americans favor a cap on emissions. The other, conducted by Republican pollster Frank Luntz, suggests that Americans support climate regulation when it's couched in terms of national security and jobs, as well as clean air. Fred Krupp.
Americans want their leaders to act on climate change, but not necessarily for the reasons that environmental groups think that action is wanted.
Krupp says he never thought he'd be touting a poll by Frank Luntz. Luntz once famously advised George Bush to question the science on global warming as a strategy to fight climate legislation. This week, Luntz advised Krupp that Americans don't care as much about global warming as they do ending America's dependence on foreign oil. Green groups have already taken that message to heart. Clean Energy Works, a new coalition aimed at passing a climate bill, uses the slogan, "More jobs, less pollution, greater security." I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, the credit reporting agencies have always looked deeply at financial histories, income. Now they're trying some social networking. A company called Rapleaf is examining tweets and Facebook posts. So that status update admitting you spent hundreds of dollars on Jaeger shots? Ouch. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.